Good morning. Well, we're in the middle of this series, Go Home. One of the things that we're looking at is what are the homes we have in our life, and what does that mean for our role in these communities and for their impact on us. And so the first weekend, we started by taking a look at what most of us generally associate with the word home, which is our families. You know, if we're younger and we're still living with our parents, it's our mom and dad, or it could be our brothers and sisters, or our spouse, or our own children. What does it mean to go home, and what's God's call for us within our families? And then last week, Brian took a look at cities, the fact that our cities are one of the definitions of home that God has for us, that we live in cities and we're called to cities. Part of our home is our cities. And what does that mean? What does that mean for us and our community around us? And then next week, Brian's going to take a look at our home of planet Earth. What does it mean that we are on this planet? This is our home. And what is our role within taking care of this this planet? This weekend, though, we're going to take a look at a little bit different definition of what it means to go home. And we're looking at kind of the fact that most of us, we go through life pretty much, I think, feeling that something's kind of been taken from us, and we're not exactly sure what that is. And for a lot of us, that answer, that it is community, that God has created us not to do life alone, but within community, and that means a lot more than just our family members. For some of us, we're not even living in a city where we have any family members. But the thing is, for all of us, God has created specific pieces of us that can only be filled through this thing called friendship. The problem is, we throw out that term friend so often that it really has become almost meaningless. And most of us are settling for a definition of friendship that's well beneath what the word really means. And that's the gap that we're feeling in our life. So we live in these places, we live in these crowded cities and in crowded places where we're surrounded by people, but all the time we can feel alone on this journey. I think this song kind of captures not the reality of our lives, but the definite feeling that we have of walking around all these people, but yet in the middle of it feeling alone. I learned in the last service that is a harmonium that Rick's playing back there, the funky thing with the baffles. It's all the harmonium fans in the crowd. Yeah, finally. Apparently the accordion is back. It is back, and I can call my mom and tell her there's a place in the Crossroads Band after all. She's been wondering about that. That hits people on different levels. I still haven't quite figured that out. I feel like I need to give some kind of a caveat here to talking about friendship this weekend, and this is it. I do not talk about this from a place of strength. Sometimes Brian or Chuck or I, we're up here and we're talking about something that has really been kind of a hallmark strength in life. Not the case for this. It has not come natural to me. I'm not the poster boy for being a good friend and having good friends in my life. And it's been kind of a track record throughout my life. And I think some of it maybe is because, kind of on a personality standpoint, I'm a pretty extreme introvert. If anybody's ever done a Myers-Briggs, anything like that, I come out pretty extreme on the introvert. And sometimes that's a surprise for people because they say, but you speak to a lot of people and things like that. And I could do that. I like to communicate to people. But, as far as like going deeper, it takes a lot of energy on my part, and I've had friends who've decided, that the appropriate term for me is kind of a different scale, and I'm a pseudo-introvert, and they say the defining definition of a pseudo-introvert is you like everybody to like you and then leave you alone, so that's kind of, I think, how it plays out for me. But, so what that's meant in my life is I've had a lot of friends, but not very many people that I felt like really knew me, or I knew them. And so in high school, I had a lot of friends, but nobody I could say was really my best friend, and nobody that I'd say, wow, they really knew me, and I knew them. And so going away to college, kind of the trend kind of continued. I went from a small town to a large university, over 30,000 students, and I'm there, and I'm like, man, I want to experience community. I want to really have the college life, and I really want to experience community. And of course, for a freshman guy at college, experience community, that means what? Meet girls. Basically, and a lot of them. So how do I do that? I joined a fraternity. So at school I was, that's what you did. So I did that, and it had some great benefits, and I developed some great relationships in that. But 125 guys living in this house for 4 years, at the end of the time, we still kind of, I think we existed at a kind of a level where we still didn't really know each other. And I had settled for that, and I was happy about that. But as I look back on it now, I don't really feel like those were kind of real strong friendships that had formed during that time. We had a lot of common interests, we had fun together, but we didn't really know each other. And so for one of the ways that played out is, we never would use, the F word. feelings. You know, we have never talked about, you know, kind of, how are you feeling? You know, never. What is that? You know, what, you know, and so, for instance, you could, like my roommate, you know, my roommate could come home and tell me that, his girlfriend of 3 years, Jill, had broken up with him. So she comes home and tells me, you know, Jill broke up with me after 3 years. And pretty much the sum total of our interaction on that would be, he would say, man, you know, Jill dumped me last night. Oh. Awkward pause on my part. Did you get all your CDs back? Yeah. Okay, cool. And then we kind of move on, you know. Or I could have a friend that has, you know, a serious drinking problem. And the sum total of my helping him would be that I would make sure that he got home safe from the party that night. And then that would be it. And all the time, these kind of surface level things, which we need those kind of relationships in our life. We need those. But we also need at least a few people that we're going deeper and we really know them. And the thing that was weird for me is what I knew about people is I knew there was a lot more going on than we talked about with each other. We kind of operated on this, you know, informal don't ask, don't tell. You know, don't ask me how I'm really feeling and I won't tell you and we'll be fine. And all the time I knew there was serious stuff going on. I knew the people around me, I knew that there were challenges, there were frustrations, there was disappointment, there was pain, there was anger, there was betrayal, there was hatred. You know, and those were just the girls I was dating. I can't imagine what was going on. What was going on kind of in a larger kind of community around me. Yet it settled over and over again for what I would say we were drinking buddies. We were drinking buddies. Nothing so wrong about that. You know, it's nice to have those people in your life. But to not have a single relationship that had ever gone beyond that, I found myself kind of coming to a defining moment. I had been out of school, I don't know how long it was, maybe a year and a half or so, and I flew to Cincinnati for a meeting, and unexpectedly I was promoted much sooner than I was expecting. So great news, awesome news, wow, I wasn't expecting this. Remember being at CVG, and I'm waiting for my flight, and I still remember the phone booth that I was at there, the little phone terminal, and I go there, I'm so excited about this, come out of nowhere, and I pick up the phone, and I'm not quite sure who I would call. You know, I mean, I know, okay, I call my mom and dad, they'll be happy, you know. I can call some other people, they'll be happy for me. But there's nobody I could call that it would have been like they just got promoted. As a matter of fact, I knew there was going to be all kinds of conflicted emotions with people that I did call because they're wondering why they haven't been and all that. And there was nobody who I could truly celebrate this with. And I realized kind of at moments like that, I had gotten to a place in my life where I hit my highest peaks in my life and my lowest valleys, I was doing alone. And the only parts of my life I was doing with anybody else were the middle parts. And that's why I was feeling like something had been taken from me. So it was a little while after, out of school, maybe a year and a half or 2 years, that I stumbled into a couple friendships that were totally different than what I experienced before. Still remember a guy by the name of George Babbis and a guy by the name of Jim Bechtold. I became friends with, and they would ask me how I was doing, and you could tell they really wanted to know. They would share with me frustrations they had going on. They would be kind of transparent with me about, you know, kind of some stuff they were dealing with that I never would have shared with anybody else. And I found myself starting to respond in kind. And you know what happened? I almost found like, what's going on? I feel like I'm breathing a little bit clearer air. I feel like I have a little bit kind of more energy to me. And I realized what was going on was that for the first time in my life, I had a couple people that I didn't have to have my game face on for. And game faces cannot necessarily be bad things, but if you wear them all the time, you start to forget who you really are. And I started to find I could be real and I could be transparent with these people in a way I didn't have to put on my game face. And I think that's a real biblical principle that God's given us. We see that throughout the Bible, this role of what that means. There's one place in particular somebody pointed out to me once in the Old Testament of Moses, you know, this incredible leader of the nation of Israel. And at one point, Moses had a face-to-face encounter with God. He was able actually to speak to God face to face. And one of the outcomes of that was that when Moses returned to the people that he was leading from in a face to face encounter with God, his face glowed. Some of the glory of God had shined on him and his face was now radiating, almost like the moon that reflects the sun's light, that he was reflecting God's light and his face was beaming. But apparently from what we can tell from the way the Bible talks about it, over time that glow started to fade from Moses' face. And so apparently what Moses did was he put a veil over his face. And he put a veil over so that people would not start to see that the light was starting to fade from his face. Because Moses was kind of ashamed. He had gotten used to being known as the guy with the glowing face. And so as it started to fade, he put a veil over so people wouldn't see his real face. What's interesting is the way that the Apostle Paul then, later in the Bible, talks about this. And he refers to this instance with Moses in this letter that he's writing to the church in Corinth. And take a look at what he says about Moses and then how it can be different for us. This is 2 Corinthians 3, starting in verse 16. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we, who with unveiled faces, all reflect the Lord's glory. And this picture that Paul seems to be calling us to is that we do not have to guard our faces. There may be appropriate uses for a game face at work. There may be appropriate places for this. But we need to have at least a few people in our life. We can live with an unveiled face. And it's possible. I've even found that it's possible for a pseudo-introvert to get to the place with at least a few people where you have an unveiled face and the life that comes from that. And so for me, in my 20s, I would say the defining questions in my 20s were things like, am I good at what I do? You know, and just as important, will other people think I'm good at what I do? You know, and so basically the questions for me driving it were really what basically came down to, am I impressive? Am I an impressive person? Can I impress others? And then I carried that, you know, certainly into my 30s, but I started to find this tension in my 30s as I started to feel like, you know, kind of that thing of, I feel like something's been taken from me and I don't know what it is. Something off. It was this, and I didn't define it that, but there was this friendship thing on that kind of level of a real friend that was really missing. And the tension that I was coming to is I still wanted to impress people, but I was finding I had to make a choice between impressing somebody and being real with them. And I wasn't able to do both. And so, you know, I'm 42 now, and probably the last 5 years have really been a journey of kind of understanding that the driving question of my life is becoming more, can I be known? Can I be known? You know, there's a God who knows every dirty little thing about me and likes me. Could there be people like that as well? Can I be known? So that's, you know, kind of been my journey toward at least a little bit of pulling back the veil. And I'm no expert at it by any means, but I have found that God takes this so seriously that we not go through life by ourselves. That He's given us some key tools for this, key tools for us so that we can move kind of into these friendships. One of them, Paul actually talks about a little bit later in the book of Hebrews. Take a look about how Paul talks about this call to us and what's available to us. Paul says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." Now, that scripture, I don't know if you ever heard it referred to before, is often referred to as there. That's the reason why we get together as a church. You know, that's the reason you can't, spirituality is a very personal thing, but it is not a private thing. It is a communal thing. And I think that's a big piece of what our Western world has lost that people in the East understand is spirituality is a communal thing. My journey with God affects you and yours does with mine as well. And that can be for the better. So, you know, it's a communal thing. So I think a reasonable application of that scripture is there. That's why we shouldn't give up meeting together. As people who say, I don't need to go to church. I can just do this all by myself. No, we need to have this as part of us. And I think that's a reasonable application. The interesting thing, though, is when you look at that and what it's calling us to, it's not stuff that happens in a big dark auditorium. I mean, look at that. Considering how we can spur one another on, you know, moving toward love and good deeds, encouraging one another, those are things that don't happen seated facing forward silently for an hour. Not things that happen in a big dark auditorium. Now, there's great reasons for a big dark auditorium, and it's wonderful, and some cool things happen here, and it's a great tool. But those kind of things happen within the kind of the real definition of community, the real definition of church that was used there in the New Testament. The word ecclesia, which meant kind of this, the church at the time as they were defining it, these were people hanging out in their houses having dinner together. These were kind of the smaller kind of communal type thing. And so we've developed here at Crossroads a lot of different tools for moving us into those kind of communities, recognizing this important things that we do here on the weekend. But if over time this comes to define 100% your journey with God, You are missing out on key parts that God has. He wants to take you to another place in your life of who you're created to be. And so one articulation, we have, you know, community groups around here where you can be in a group for a while and study a certain topic. And we also have small groups. We've called them A-teams in the past. We're going back to using the term small group. But it's groups of, you know, maybe six or eight people who you just kind of seem to connect with that you do life with on a regular basis. You know, yeah, maybe you get together, you study the Bible every once in a while together, but also you get together, you just hang out, you talk about what's going on in your life, and this kind of small group thing. So, what I want to do, because this has been a very clumsy journey for me, and I am nowhere near the expert on this, I want to spend the rest of the time this morning bringing up some guys that I've been experimenting with this for about 5 years now. And it's interesting, it's guys who, along with me, each and every one of them has a very impressive track record of a long list of drinking buddies in their life. But really don't look back and say, really, there's anybody, you know, there's not, you know, friends that I've had that I really, you know, kind of be real with. So I've been doing that for about 5 years now. I want to bring them up and we're going to talk about, for us, in clumsy ways on this journey, what have we learned in this? So we're going to do that. But before they do that, before I bring them up, I want to go ahead and ask the ushers to come down for the offering. And, you know, this is part of your community. This is part of the community experience where we support stuff that's going on around here. But, you know, if you're checking this out, please don't feel any weirdness. Just pass that bag by when it comes by. During the offering, real quick, because I want you to have a complete picture of kind of small groups here, not just my own. Brian Tome is also in a men's small group. So we're going to be able to look in just a clip real quick on an interaction that he's having with one of the guys in his group.
Look, those guys are touchy roll. They don't fool around. You know that, right? You want me to punk out? No, I'm not saying punking out, but I'm just... You know what I mean.
Hey, Danny, we've been friends a long time, right?
Yeah.
Well, you remember the drive-in the other night? We went and the movie, and it was like the duel, and the guy's best friend went with him, and like it was just like his lieutenant, like his second, you know?
Yeah.
So?
Well, I thought that you could maybe be my second at Thunder Road.
What do you mean? You want me to drive with you or what?
No.
Oh. Hey.
Well, listen, I'll pick you up at 3, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. For all you kids out there, Brian Tome was the one without the cigarette behind his head. Just know that. Well, welcome, guys. This is Gary Marco, Sam Manos, and Kurt Platt. Thought maybe we kind of start. Just tell us kind of a little bit about yourself.
I have a question, though, before we go on.
You're going off script already,
Why?
Sam?
Well, you mentioned an experiment. We're an experiment?
Yeah. We're an experiment, yes. We've been taking notes.
Yes.
We're going to get into that.
Yeah. Okay.
The group has really been more of an intervention than anything.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything at all. Tell us your name, how long you've been coming to Crossroads, and... give us your college nickname. And fight song, if you want to stand and do the fight song.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah, yes. Sir.
Oh, okay. Gary Marco, I've been coming to Crossroads for about 5 years now. And my college nickname was Garko the Man Frog.
Garko the Man Frog. And now here's the story behind it. Garko the Man Frog, because your vertical leap in college was what?
It was an old basketball type thing. So it was 43 inches.
43 inches. Now, I don't know if anybody, it didn't really mean anything. And then I went online and found out that Michael Jordan's was like 41 inches or something like that. You know, 40, freak. Freak. Freak of nature.
Freak. Yeah. Yeah. I've been known as a freak since.
Oh, yes. Yeah. All right. All right. And continuing
for
in
different
that
reasons.
Yeah. Sam.
Sam Manis. I've been coming to Crossroads for a little over 4.5 years. And my college nickname was Man Ass, half man, half ass. I don't see it, but maybe you all behind me might. So, and I still get phone calls from my old college buddies, and that's the first thing they say. So,
that's special.
I have to break it into my son.
Yeah. Kurt.
See, I hate this part because mine's so lame. It's just that my name's Kurt Platt, and I've been coming here for around 10 years.
Okay.
So, And I had a nickname, and it was Slade, and my brother had given me a a coat from the Navy that had it stenciled on the back, and that's what they called me. So it's not man ass, it's not
we've
Garco.
Decided that, we've decided that's the weakest story behind it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Somebody gave you a coat, it had that name on the back, and you went.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to kind of show you how much Kurt has grown since then, his nickname now is Members Only.
Yeah.
Brian, what was your nickname?
My nickname, I have no nickname that I care to perpetuate.
Yeah.
we'll just say that. So I've had numerous nicknames. But, yeah, speaking of your friends calling you, I had a nickname. It's not for the reason you would think, all right? So just know that. But in college, I was called B-Dubs, and then it evolved to Doubler, and then it evolved to Dirty Doubler. I don't know. It's not for reasons you would think, but I was president of my fraternity, so I would get all the mail forwarded to me from my fraternity during the summer to my home. My parents would be getting this mail, and it was forwarded to the Dirty Doubler. Brian, why do they call you that? What is it? They were very upset. Very upset. All right. Let's see. How do I recover from that? All right. We have been, in varying degrees, we've been friends for 5 years, 9 years, you know, kind of so. And as we've been talking about kind of, especially for each one of us, not being guys that have a track record of, like, having good friends and stuff like that, or having a lot of drinking buddies, but never going kind of beyond that, we've started to say, well, what's happened in this group that's been different for us versus the rest of our life? And we started to kind of draw out some themes of that. And so that's what I want to do. I want to kind of share kind of three things we've been finding in our group that have moved us, very kind of reluctant friends from this thing, into places that we feel like we have some stronger friendships than we've ever had in our life. And the first one that I want to talk about is the idea, and it's a little counterintuitive for people, but that friendship takes risk. Friendship takes risk. And a lot of us think that friendships are kind of this thing of they just come naturally. You know, so if you just find somebody that you click with, you know, it just comes naturally. And the fact is, it doesn't, is that friendships do not come naturally. And friendships, one of the unnatural things for guys, I think in general for guys, this is a bigger deal than it is for women, of this idea of kind of revealing ourselves to each other a little bit more, taking off the game face a little bit. That there's risk involved in that. And I started to call it, you know, kind of appropriate levels of self-disclosure. Of that we do not go to any kind of level of friendship until we do that. And I've started to think about it in terms of, you know, any sound financial advice you get, if anyone's being honest with you, they will tell you, you know what, high risk, high yield, low risk, low yield. You don't have to be doing this very long before you realize, unless I am willing to accept at least some risk in my investments, I am not going to experience a significant yield, you know, in some way. And I think it's the same in friendships that, we think that we can just live these kind of low-risk existences, drinking buddies, that kind of stuff, never kind of take a risk of going deeper, and yet think we're going to develop these friendships that are beyond that, and it just doesn't happen. It's a low-risk, low-yield kind of adventure. So, Gary, for you, you've talked about this idea of kind of the risk, and in particular, trust, mm-hmm. and how we'd known each other for a little while, and I talked to you about doing this group. You didn't exactly jump at that thought.
No, I didn't. You know, over time, I had developed some trust issues. I had relationships. I used to live in Minneapolis, and I had some relationships there where I had gotten to a deeper level, and then moved here and went through some difficult times, went through a real painful divorce, and I was kind of yearning for those types of relationships again. Came to Crossroads and was really trying to seek that out, and In the process, I got burned several times in my attempt at creating some friendships.
What, you've talked about burned. Tell us a little more. What do you mean by getting burned?
Well, you know, I was looking for that sort of deeper relationship, so I would probably be accused of sharing too much with people too immediately. And
which is interesting, because that's probably the other, not the natural bent for a guy.
Yeah.
You know, usually you're holding back, you know, but you would do that, but what would happen?
It would get around. I'd hear from someone else something that I didn't want them to know. And that again, you know, put me in a situation where I didn't trust people the way I should trust them. So
now, one of the things we've talked about is the idea of that you do need to take risks with people, but it needs to be appropriate
right.
level of self-disclosure. And you started applying that.
Yeah, I mean, I had expressed my displeasure and what was going on with you, and you had mentioned something about trial balloons. I'm like, what are you talking about? Trial balloons. But you went on to explain that, you know, it's okay to share something with someone as long as you don't care that it gets around and see what they do with it. You know, do they talk to other people about it? Do they share deeply with you? You know, is there empathy? And you can kind of develop a friendship there. And then if you get to a point where you feel like that relationship has reached the level that it needs to reach, you know, some people are like more social friends and others become more personal, then you can kind of share with the correct people.
And everybody doesn't have to be your best friend. You know, you're not going to have a whole lot of friendships, you know, that are kind of like this. But the trial balloon thing was just, you know what, if you're connecting with somebody as a friend and you're thinking, wow, maybe there is this other level of friendship we'd both benefit from, what you do is you just float out a little trial balloon. You just get a little bit more vulnerable with them than you normally would, and you see how they react.
Right.
You know, one, you see, like Gary mentioned, one, do they keep it in confidence? Or do you share this and then your story starts coming back to you through other people? Well, you know, gee, you know, at least at this point, the person is not going to be kind of go to that level of friendship because the trust thing is just not there. But also the empathy thing, you know, do they get like really judgmental with you when you share something you're struggling
and
with?
And there's a discernment thing too.
Yeah.
Once you share something with someone and if it's, and they don't respond in the way you want, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
it's just, okay, I know I can't share that sort of stuff with that person again.
And then over time, the third one, which I think just as important as the rest, is over time, do they end up respond in like ways? Do they end up kind of maybe taking a little step and sharing about something they're wrestling with and see where that's going? Because the thing is, without that third one, I mean, you can have a friendship or you can have someone that they keep things in confidence, they really empathize with you, but if over time it's not a two-way thing and they're not kind of sharing some stuff, you don't have friendship. You've got free counseling, you know, is what you have. And that's, maybe that could play a role, a part of your life, but it's not something to base a friendship on. You need kind of all three of those pieces. And so, you know, we talk about appropriate levels of self-disclosure. Like you meet somebody for the first time, you know, maybe, and you're getting coffee in the atrium at Crossroads. That's not the time to share with them about that persistent rash, you know, that just kind of won't go away, you know, or to tell them about how you always hated your mother and Brian Tome looks just like her and you're having all kinds of issues. Issues are kind of, but there'll be times for that kind of stuff. There'll be times, but not right now. And I remember it happens in like dating relationships too. I remember when I was dating Nancy, being somebody who keeps things very close to the vest, don't really talk about much at all. And Nancy, there's this pivotal moment in our dating where she kind of opened up and shared with me some kind of intense stuff from her past that kind of made her who she was. And it was really important and it made her vulnerable and it was really kind of a turning point in our dating. And I remember feeling kind of some pressure of, oh, I need to kind of respond in some way. So I remember that night, I remember sharing with her that I sometimes get really frustrated when I'm stuck in traffic. You know, she was not impressed with my ability to reveal, you know, so it kind of comes over time. But the thing is, it has to come, at least in a couple of relationships, because the thing is, if Crossroads, if our goal was just this place be kind of this big giant cocktail party where we can all just kind of have some surface conversation, there's some use for that, but our goal is so much more deeper than that. It's that we develop at least a couple of real friendships in this. So it takes some risk. It takes risk, more for some than others. But also, there's another piece that we've really found, and we've kind of dissected this, is that it takes work. Is that it takes work. It is not something that really comes easy. I think that there's this myth that if I'm being real, it's easy. The thing is, being real is not easy. The easy thing is to fake it. The easy thing in this life is to fake it. Being real actually takes some work. And I especially see, like, for instance, with an environment like Crossroads, I see some people who come, and I would say they're coming looking to get community. And then I see other people come, and they're looking to help make community. And I can tell you over and over again, those that are looking to come, give me a friend.
Right.
That's the missing piece of my portfolio. I got the job, I got that, I got that. Now I need a friend. Come, give me a friend. Those that are looking to get community are over and over again disappointed. But those that look to come that realize they're going to need part of making community, I see some incredible things happen in their life, particularly with friends. And it always reminds me of, you know, we started Crossroads about 11 years ago, and it was actually out of a small group. There were 11 of us that were friends that we started Crossroads out of 11 years ago. And I ran across this quote right when we were thinking about launching Crossroads that's really stuck with me to this day. And it's that from Jerry Weitzman. She says, sometimes you've got to create what you want to be part of. You know, there's a work thing, and sometimes you've got to create what it be. And so the work thing, it not only takes risk, but it takes work. And I know, Sam, for you, that's been kind of a key piece of this, is realizing, you know, what it means that that it takes work, and then some of the benefits you get from that.
Yeah. Well, the way I grew up, kept things to myself, didn't go outside the family or even your friends because you want to look cool and be the tough guy. And
you had a great family, like large Italian family, you know, all that.
Roman Catholic, Italian, and you know, where you're brought up. You know, I'm up and down a Catholic religion, but, you know, you were guilted a lot of times, and you didn't really express a lot of things, especially to your friends or anybody to go to. And, you know, for me to be doing this today, I mean, this is huge for me because, you know, I had a tragic in my life 4 years ago. I lost my little brother horrifically. He left behind four sons from 1 month and a half to 8 years old, and I was hurt. And here I came to Crossroads, and I met with Brian, and we started this small group. And if it wasn't for them, this group, I don't know where I'd be at today. And, you know, again, I want to express, you know, I lost my brother, and my family were tight, and that's like losing an arm. My parents lost a son, my sister-in-law lost a husband, and my nephews lost a father. But for me to come out and express how I felt, I didn't tell anybody how I was feeling. I only told these guys right here.
And I still remember that moment because we did, a lot of us just did the kingdom journey earlier this year, where we kind of, what we do for 6 weeks at the Weekends at Crossroads, we tie in with being able to do a small group related to that during the week. And the year before that, we did the journey, all church journey we did, was called ID. And it was really getting to the bottom of, what's your identity? Where are you getting your identity and sense of worth from? And I still remember it was the first night of our ID group, and we're doing this thing, it was called a lifeline, where you kind of chart like the, just go back in your life and think about the peaks and valleys of your life. What were the highs and lows? And that night, there was a real turning point in our group because you opened up and you shared about how much you were hurting and how much you were mad at God and didn't understand about your brother.
And you know, another thing, and you know, I was always taught you can't ask why or even yell at God. And it wasn't until I came in this group that you can get mad and you can yell. And it's okay. I mean, you're not going to be crucified for it. The commitment that I have with this group and we have with each other, I mean, you know, is like no other.
Now, what was cool was, you know, Gary, we were talking about how after the fact, Sam describes that night, and he thought he was being really weak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the idea of, actually, it was quite the opposite, the impact on the group.
Yeah, I mean, when Sam went deep and really showed his heart, it brought all of us closer, and it also made the whole group get deeper and really get real.
Yeah, you were.
And that's when the group really, really kicked off. Because we'd been surfacey really for a while.
So when you thought you were being weak, you're actually showing some strong leadership.
Right.
There.
I thought y'all were going to kick me out of the group.
Not that night.
No. Yeah.
Now, you know what's interesting is, and I guess we just all have these perceptions, but you've played football all your life, college, a little bit in the NFL, and it makes me think that kind of team environment, you would have had this type experience because of how tough some of the stuff you had to go through with those guys was.
And that's two different things. You know, you those are your teammates, you went through war with those guys, but to be where I was at emotionally, I would never even divulge that to them because there again, now I'm showing my weakness, and that's something you just don't do. And you know, thank God for this group because it's helped me tremendously.
You've used another word when we've talked about friendships, and particularly within this group, and it's challenge. What do you mean by that? Why do you think that's so important? Why do you point to that?
Because when I come to the group with a problem or a situation, you know, you guys challenge me, and we challenge each other.
Right.
And, you know, there's no BS. Let's just put it that way. You know, you're not going to snowball anybody. Hey, let's get real. You know what, Sam? Maybe it's not other people. Maybe it's you that's the problem. And, you know, that's hard to take sometimes, you know, sit there. Even at work, and you go and your boss may be telling you something you're not doing right, you get on a defensive mode. When I come in this group, we're not in a defensive mode. We can share with each other exactly how we feel. And, you know, hey, Kurt, it's you.
Yeah.
You know,
we say it to him more than anybody else. So
it's, Gary more than me.
But Sam, we say it without judgment.
That's right. It with love.
And we
we're not laughing at each other. We're laughing with each other.
Yeah, that's it.
I've had that. I've had some times where I'm like really frustrated about my kids or something. I'll come to the group and I'll share it. And what I get back is kind of not quite the commiserating I was expecting. Right. It's like, you know, Brian, that's entirely acceptable behavior from an 8-year-old. You know, yeah. I think it's you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Marching around the house is not a good punishment.
Yeah. That's not easy to hear, but I know there's no other agenda coming from this, guys. And we said we're going to be real with each other. And you know what? Every week, we don't always leave completely liking each other all the time. I mean, there's kind of been peaks and valleys to this thing. We disappoint each other, you know, things like that. But what comes out of that is the work that this thing has over time. And that's the thing of it being real is not necessarily mean being easy. And I think again, that goes back to the thing of taking the risk, doing the work. And that's what separates, I think, people who find real friendships from this incredibly sad sight, which sometimes you'll see is people standing around waiting for community to happen to them. You know, no, it's the risk thing and it's the realness.
And you know, another thing too, the commitment that I have in this group has made me outside the group have better relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fun to come into the group.
Well, and I'd like to share, you know, Sam had talked, we had talked about this the other day, how when we first started the group, I was probably the most resistant in getting in the group, the trust issues and things of that nature. But my quote was, I thought getting in the group was going to affect my spiritual growth.
Right.
You know, that it was going to stunt it because, you know, I had reached a certain level, I guess, whatever it might be. But as it turns out, over time, it's actually accelerated it.
I think you thought a lot of it, too, was we're going to take more time away from Brian. From you.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And in fact, our first meeting was 90 minutes, and I had 5 of that 90.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we probably had the issue of the week.
Sam. Yeah. Nice meeting you all. Bye.
You know, see you next week.
But one of the things is that it's not just just the risk thing and the work thing is not enough because it not only takes risk, it not only takes work, but it does take time. First night we got together as a group and with you, 5 minutes and you know, that was it. There's something that over time, and I think a lot of us that are really performance based, we tend to say, well, I want this right now. You know, is there some way I can turbocharge this? You know, is there some way, you know, I've said someday I'm going to write the book, Special Moments Made More Efficient, you know, it's going to be a marriage manual. Be available next Valentine's Day. But there's some things that you can't turbocharge. And friendship is one of them. It takes risk, it takes work, and it does take time. I know for you, Kurt, you've talked about kind of the role of time and over time the sweetness of that payoff for you within these friendships.
Yeah, I've benefited so much. I mean, I could spend hours up here talking about how this small group has impacted my life. But a couple things. You know, in the beginning, when I first met you guys, you know, and I came in after this group was formed. And I remember I went out into the atrium and Brian's sitting there and I said, how's it going? And these guys are sitting with him. I thought he got hitmen, you know. I thought he got bodyguards. Because, I mean, look at him. He looks like he's packing.
I look like
he doesn't need to pack, you know. So it's...
So, you know my nickname.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a bit intimidating. But when I got into the group, you know, I'm in recovery. So for me to come... I didn't do any trial blends. I just took a, you know, dump truck and dumped it. So... but over time, I've been blessed in so many ways. We were meeting in my office, and I just got in a space, and they were saying, hey, can we meet at your office? And, I mean, it was just this big space with a desk next to an outlet, and I was, you know.
I'd buy sandwiches and chips for us and pop.
Yeah. And, you know, I was struggling in business and stuff like that, trying to get something started. And, you know, these guys, when they talk about challenging and, you know, up on the screen, it was encouraging. Man, these guys encouraged me because I struggled, I think just like everybody, feeling like I'm not the guy for what I'm doing. I felt inadequate at times. I was afraid. And I felt comfortable enough to tell these guys that. You know, sometimes I wouldn't even want to tell my wife that. You know, I didn't want her freaking out. So, which when I told her, she did. So, it's, you know, it's
appropriate disclosure.
And often
that's
that,
not a good thing to
and
share.
Often that was an entirely appropriate response.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. But, the, you know, these guys, they filled that gap. There was a gap between me performing at a certain level in life and feeling inadequate, like I'm not the guy to do it. And then, you know, there was another thing, and, you know, this is, you know, we were talking about trial blends. This wasn't just a truckload. This was just this nuclear thing that happened in my life. It, you know, it was catastrophic. Most people in this community know that I'm in recovery. I'm a recovering addict. And I had been in the group. We'd done the, you know, I'd gotten vulnerable. We did the work together. And enough time had passed that when I relapsed, and when I relapsed, this was the first group that I shared that with. You know, my wife knew, and then these guys knew. And it was just amazing. They didn't reject me, even though they didn't have experience personally with addiction and recovery. Sam, especially, he's been very, you know, anytime I shared about recovery earlier on, he was like, well, just stop, you know. It's just,
hello.
He's like, you know.
You forgot to shake it.
Yes, there were two levels to Sam Manos' recovery program. Just stop and then hold them and shake them hard.
Yeah.
You know, which you never shake a baby, Sam. You never shake anyone. Okay?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Don't ever do that.
You know, it was like stuff like, you know, haven't you heard of willpower? You know, and, I mean, stuff like that. And, you know, and I knew he didn't understand it because he had something in his life with a nephew, and he didn't understand what was going on with him. But this group, this small group, I was able to come and get real with them because I had already gotten real with them with other things. They rallied all these troops together. I mean, legions of people. My wife's small group, this small group. I have other friends that are in small groups. And they put together this group of people. When my wife came into the building on a couple Sundays, they pulled her back in this prayer room, and they just surrounded her and put their hands on her and just prayed. You know, I was nowhere to be found. I certainly didn't want to be here because I was embarrassed. I was feeling hopeless and helpless. I felt very far from God. I felt like I didn't feel Him in my life. And man, they just put their hands on her and they prayed for her. And then I found out, through that going public through these guys, and I trusted them with that, that man, there were close to 100 people from this community praying for me. And I call them, you know, it's like these freedom fighting, guerrilla warfare, you know, barbaric prayer warriors, you know, and it's just, and it was amazing. They just surrounded me. I started getting cards and stuff with all this stuff written.
I still
on
remember
it.
that Sunday, and I actually, so Kurt's wife Beth is in a group of women where she has a small group, and I think it probably was them that instigated it. I would assume we didn't.
I like to think that they did.
We're not
so
thinking at that
we
level.
Did.
We did.
Awesome.
Yeah,
level.
So, yeah.
But the two of us got together and we said, you know what, we just want to surround Beth and we just want to be praying for Kurt. And the morning we got together, Kurt hadn't come home. So no one knew where he was, you know, and he's out. It's pretty intense, but I remember us kind of praying for her. And then I remember Sam, you know, at one point Sam said, all right, you know, somebody know where he is? Anybody have any idea? We're going to get him.
Yeah.
We're going to get him. And he's like, well, and I was like, at that point we had to point out the difference to Sam, the difference between a prayer group and getting up a posse. You know, something. And so I started to get a little fired up by the idea. And I was like, yeah, let's go get him. Come on. Who knows where he is? Let's, and I had this picture in my mind, you know, of us going and what are all our roles would be. You know, and Sam will break down the door and then he'll go in, he'll grab Kurt. I'll be in the car praying. You know, do this. And then we'll all get together afterwards and have a laugh, you know, about it.
You know what happened? That my nephew lived with me, and he was an addict. And I treated him horrible. And it wasn't after this all had happened that, you know, I finally called him up and I apologized for my actions because I didn't know how to treat an addict. And one thing is you don't shake them. you don't say just quit. That's just not going to work. And so I learned a lot from that.
Well, and the thing is, I can specifically point to something I've been taught from each one of you guys. And I learned things through that time when Kurt felt he was at a moment of weakness. I learned some things through you and how you wrestled with that I'm still applying in my life. And that's one of the things of, I think there's also this other dimension when you're in kind of a small group like this that even goes beyond just having a one-on-one friendship with people. Because there's something that happens, there's things about Kurt that I find out only when Sam's in the room. You know, and the same with Gary. And it really reminds me of, I often quote from C.S. Lewis because his writing, you know, had a phenomenal impact on my life. And Lewis, you know, was this professor at Oxford and, you know, wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and, excuse me, a lot of other books. But he had a group, you know, kind of like this. And they had a little different form because one of the main things they had in common was they would get together and share stuff that they were writing, share with each other. And they called them the Inklings, And a phenomenal group. You can imagine C.S. Lewis wrote The Chronicles of Narnia, was in that group. J.R.R. Tolkien wrote Lord of the Rings, was in that group. I mean, it was a powerful spot. And they would get together every once in a while. They would get together at this pub and they would just catch up on how life was going and they would share stuff that was going on. And Lewis had such an impact on my life that I was connecting through London on a project last summer, and I specifically took a day off to travel up to Oxford just to go to Lewis's home, and I searched out the Eagle and Child pub, which that's where Lewis's small group happened at. The Inklings would meet there in this back room there. And one of the things that Lewis said, which is so profound, was he used to call Tolkien Ronald, because that's J.R.R. Tolkien's, you know, first name, Ronald. And they had a mutual guy, a friend in the group named Charles Williams. And Charles Williams died. And Lewis said, you know, it's really interesting because you would think Charles is dead. You would think without Charles in the group that I would have more of Ronald now because I would have more time with him. He said, and it's actually the opposite. He says, I have less of Ronald because there were some things about Ronald that only Charles brought out. And there were things about me that we never discovered unless Charles is in the room. And there's some dynamic to not only having a one-on-one friendship, but sharing that within, you know, kind of this thing of a small group that that stuff comes out of that you just weren't expecting. Well, there's something on that of this. Okay, so it takes risk, it takes work, and it takes time. I also feel like I need, you know, just kind of full disclosure, I need a little expectation management for everyone of that it does take all these things. You can't cut either one of these out of the equation. And for some people, they'll get into a small group like this and it'll be maybe the second or the third group they get in that ever really clicks for them. And it's not a failure if you explore a small group and you decide that it's not right for you. Some people, it's two or three times. Maybe it's a subset of one of the groups that you try that ends up clicking for you. But the other thing on the expectation management is don't think you're going to get into this and it's going to be all people you just kind of laugh and have a good time with all the time. You will be, I guarantee you that if you pursue real friendship, you will be disappointed, you will be frustrated, you will be angry at times. There's been multiple times in the life of this group that each one of us have wanted out of the group for one reason or the other, and sometimes it's appropriate to leave the group, but we've been ticked off at each other, we've been disappointed with each other, but over time, kind of to stick with that. And I thought about that because I heard a guy say something really sad a couple weeks ago. He's talking about somebody new, and the guy's very wealthy, the guy he's referring to, and the guy was explaining why he doesn't fly commercial anymore, why he only flies on private jets. And he was describing this experience he had where they put him on the airplane. He was next to this person who was just really obnoxious. And he said at that moment that changed him for the rest of his life, because he said, I decided that in my life, my goal was to eliminate anyone from my life that might bum me out. I will tell you, at some level, we all have that goal. And you need to know that if that is your preeminent goal, you will not only never have any friends of your life, but you'll also you could eliminate everybody from your life, be alone in a room, and you're still not going to accomplish that goal. It will happen. You will. So you've got to be signing up. You've got to be signing up for this is going to be a ride. You'll be disappointed. So just a little expectation management. What we want to do is, I want to have Kurt just kind of say a prayer for us. Just a prayer for those of us that are wondering if maybe there's another level of friendship that's out there for us. And then after he does that, Chuck Moore, who oversees spiritual development here, is going to come up and talk to you about some really cool new tools we've developed to help people who've never even thought about a small group before, never even been in one in their life, an easy way to enter into that. And also it's a cool tool for people that are already in groups that I think can kind of spur them to kind of deeper levels. And then he'll also share, just kind of shameless plug, he's also going to share some community life stuff, including Summer Nights at Next Level, which starts this coming Wednesday night. I can tell you, you don't want to miss this. The guy who's coming to speak, Matt Massey, is actually an old friend of mine who I used to be in a small group with, kind of like this, for years. It'd be really powerful, so you don't want to miss that. Kurt, would you just kind of say a quick prayer for us?
Sure. God, I just love the journey. I love where I am in my life. I love this group up here. I can truly say that I love these men. And you've done so much in my life through small groups, my small group, and so many other small groups that are in this church. You know, and where I am in life right now, I wish I could just bottle up what this brings into my life and just hand it out to the people in this room. And I know I can't do that. And that it takes work, and it just takes a lot. It takes time, and it takes courage. And so, God, I ask that you just rain down on this room only what you can, and that's the courage and the desire to find healing through community. And, you know, anybody that's just sitting in this room, God, that felt like I did years ago, didn't know what it was that was missing from their life and didn't know what this was, the potency of just getting vulnerable with a group of people was all about, I ask that you give them a nudge. Now, I ask that you just push them in that direction. Give them a hard shove. And I pray all this in your Son, Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.